Chapter 16. Yes, that was Ike. It was that evening we disagreed. He scolded me, and I answered him, "You must have heard us," and the next day he went away. Well, as I say, I must consider what it will be best to do for you in this. The first thing, it seems to me, will be to get your husband home. She impatiently shrugged her shoulders. I don't like him. Then why did you marry him? I was obliged to, after we'd proved each other by island custom. You shouldn't have thought of such a thing. It is ridiculous, and out of date nowadays. He's so old-fashioned in his notions that he doesn't think like that. However, he's gone. It is only a tiff between you, I dare say. I'll start him in business if he'll come. Is the cottage at home still in your hands? Yes, it is my freehold. Grammar Stockwell is taking care of it for me. Good. And back there you go straightway, my pretty madam, and wait till your husband comes to make it up with you. I won't go. I don't want him to come. She sobbed. I want to stay here with you, or anywhere, except where he can come. You will get over that. Now, go back to the flat, there's a dear of ice, and be ready in 1 hour, waiting in the hall for me. I don't want to. But I say you shall. She found it was no use to disobey. Precisely at the moment appointed he met her there himself, burdened only with a valise and umbrella, she with a box and other things. Directing the porter to put a vice and her belongings into a four-wheeled cab for the railway station, he walked onward from the door, and kept looking behind, till he saw the cab approaching. He then entered beside the astonished girl, and onward they went together. They sat opposite each other in an empty compartment, and the tedious railway journey began. Regarding her closely now by the light of her revelation, he wondered at himself for never divining her secret. Whenever he looked at her, the girl's eyes grew rebellious, and at last she wept. I don't want to go to him. She sobbed in a miserable voice. Pearson was almost as much distressed as she. Why did you put yourself and me in such a position? He said bitterly. It is no use to regret it now. And I can't say that I do. It affords me a way out of a trying position. Even if you had not been married to him, you would not have married me. Yes, I would, sir. What? You would? You said you wouldn't not long ago. I like you better now. I like you more and more. Pearson sighed, for emotionally he was not much older than she. That hitch in his development, rendering him the most lopsided of God's creatures, was his standing misfortune. A proposal to her which crossed his mind was dismissed as disloyalty, particularly to an inexperienced fellow islander and one who was by race and traditions almost a kinswoman. Little more passed between the twain on that wretched, never-to-be-forgotten day. Aphrodite, Ashtoreth, Phrygia, or whoever the love queen of his isle might have been, was punishing him sharply, as she knew, but too well how to punish her votaries, when they reverted from the ephemeral to the stable mood. When was it to end this curse of his heart not aging, while his frame moved naturally onward? Perhaps only with life. His first act the day, after depositing her in her own house, was to go to the chapel where, by her statement, the marriage had been solemnized, and make sure of the fact. Perhaps he felt an illogical hope that she might be free, even then, in the tarnished condition which such freedom would have involved. However, there stood the words distinctly. Isaac Pearson, Anne of Ice Carrow, son, and daughter of so-and-so, married on such a day, signed by the contracting parties, the officiating minister, and the two witnesses. 2. 13. She is enshrouded from sight one evening in early winter, when the air was dry and gusty. The dark little lane which divided the grounds of Sylvania Castle from the cottage of a vice, and led down to the adjoining ruin of Red King Castle, was paced by a solitary man. The cottage was the center of his beat, its western limit being the gates of the former residence, its eastern the drawbridge of the ruin. The few other cottages thereabout all, as if carved from the solid rock, were in darkness, but from the upper window of a vice's tiny freehold glimmered a light. Its rays were repeated from the far distant sea by the lightship lying moored over the mysterious Shambles quicksand, which brought tamelessness and domesticity into due position as balanced opposites. The sea moaned more than moaned among the boulders below the ruins, a throw of its tide, being timed to regular intervals. These sounds were accompanied by an equally periodic moan from the interior of the cottage chamber, so that the articulate heave of water and the articulate heave of life seemed but differing utterances of the selfsame troubled terrestrial being which in one sense they were. Pierced and for the man in the lane was he would look from lightship to cottage window, then back again, as he waited there between the travail of the sea without and the travail of the woman within. Soon an infant's wail of the very feeblest was also audible in the house. He started from his easy pacing and went again westward, standing at the elbow of the lane a long time. Then the peace of the sleeping village which lay that way was broken by light wheels and the trot of a horse. Pearson went back to the cottage gate and awaited the arrival of the vehicle. It was a light cart, and a man jumped down as it stopped. He was in a broad-brimmed hat, under which no more of him could be perceived than that he wore a black beard clipped like a yew fence, a typical aspect in the island. "You are a vice's husband?" asked the sculptor quickly. The man replied that he was, in the local accent. "I've just come in by 2 days' boat," he added. "I couldn't get here afore. I had contracted for the job at Peterport, and had to see tot to the end." said Pearson, "your coming means that you are willing to make it up with her?" "I don't know but I be," said the man. "Mid so well do that as anything else. If you do, thoroughly, a good business in your old line awaits you here in the island." "Why all my heart then," said the man. His voice was energetic, and, though slightly touchy, it showed, on the whole, a disposition to set things right. The driver of the trap was paid off, and Jocelyn and Isaac Pearson undoubtedly scions of a common stock in this Isle of Intermarriages, though they had no proof of it entered the house. Nobody was in the ground floor room, in the center of which stood a square table, in the center of the table a little wool mat, and in the center of the mat a lamp, the apartment having the appearance of being rigidly swept and set in order for an event of interest. The woman who lived in the house with the vice now came downstairs, and to the inquiry of the comers she replied that matters were progressing favorably, but that nobody could be allowed to go upstairs just then. After placing chairs and viands for them she retreated, and they sat down, the lamp between them the lover of the sufferer above, who had no right to her, and the man who had every right to her, but did not love her. Engaging in desultory and fragmentary conversation they listened to the trampling of feet on the floorboards overhead. Pearson full of anxiety and attentiveness, Ike awaiting the course of nature calmly. Soon they heard the feeble bleats repeated, and then the local practitioner descended and entered the room. "How is she now?" said Pearson, the more taciturn Ike looking up with him for the answer, that he felt, would serve for two as well as for one. "Doing well, remarkably well," replied the professional gentleman, with a manner of having said it in other places, and his vehicle not being at the door he sat down, and shared some refreshment with the others. When he had departed Mrs. Stockwell again stepped down, and informed them that Ike's presence had been made known to his wife. The truant warrior seemed rather inclined to stay where he was and finish the mug of ale, but Pearson quickened him, and he ascended the staircase. As soon as the lower room was empty, Pearson leant with his elbows on the table and covered his face with his hands. Ike was absent no great time. Descending with a proprietary mien that had been lacking before, he invited Jocelyn to ascend likewise, since as he had stated, that she would like to see him. Jocelyn went up the crooked old steps, the husband remaining below. A vice, though white as the sheets, looked brighter and happier than he had expected to find her, and was apparently very much fortified by the pink little lump at her side. She held out her hand to him. I just wanted to tell you, apostrophe she said, striving against her feebleness, I thought it would be no harm to see you, though 'tis rather soon, to tell you how very much I thank you for getting me settled again with Ike. He is very glad to come home again too, he says. Yes, you've done a good many kind things for me, sir. ... Whether she were really glad, or whether the words were expressed as a matter of duty, Pearson did not attempt to learn. He merely said that he valued her thanks. Now, a vice, ... he added tenderly, I resign my guardianship of you. I hope to see your husband in a sound little business here in a very short time. ... I hope, so for baby's sake, ... she said, with a bright sigh. Would you like to see her, sir? ... The baby? Oh yes, your baby. You must christen her a vice. Yes, so I will. ... She murmured readily, and disclosed the infant with some timidity. I hope you forgive me, sir, for concealing my thoughtless marriage. ... If you forgive me for making love to you. ... Yes. How were you to know? I wish Pearson bade her goodbye, kissing her hand, turned from her, and the incipient being whom he was to meet again under very altered conditions, and left the bedchamber with a tear in his eye. Here ends that dream. ... said he. Hyman, in secret or overt guise, seemed to haunt Pearson just at this time with undignified mockery which savored rather of harlequin than of the torchbearer. 2 days after parting in a lone island from the girl he had so disinterestedly loved, he met in Piccadilly his friend Summers, wonderfully spruced up, and hastening along with a preoccupied face. My dear fellow, ... said Summers, what do you think? I was charged not to tell you, but, hang it, I may just as well make a clean breast of it now as later. ... What you are not going to. ... began Pearson, with divination. Yes. What I said on impulse 6 months back I am about to carry out in cold blood. Nichola and I began in jest and ended in earnest. We are going to take one another next month for good and all. ... Part 3. A young man of 60 and me, thou seest the glowing of such fire, that on the ashes of his youth, doth lie as the deathbed whereon it must expire, consumed with that which it was nourished by. ... W. Shakespeare. 3. 1. She returns for the new season. 20 years had spread their films over the events which wound up with the reunion of the second vice and her husband, and the hoary peninsula called an island looked just the same as before, though many who had formerly projected their daily shadows upon its unrelieved summer whiteness cease now to disturb the colorless sunlight there. The general change, nevertheless, was small. The silent ships came and went from the wharf, the chisels clinked in the quarries, file after file of whitey-brown horses, in strings of 8 or 10, painfully dragged down the hill the square blocks of stone on the antediluvian wooden wheels just as usual. The lightship winked every night from the quicksands to the Beale Lantern, and the Beale Lantern glared through its eyeglass on the ship. The canine gnawing audible on the pebble bank had been repeated ever since at each tide, but the pebbles remained undevoured. Men drank, smoked, and spat in the inns with only a little more adulteration in their refreshments, and a trifle less dialect in their speech than of yore. But one figure had never been seen on the Channel Rock in the interval, the form of Pearson the sculptor, whose first use of the chisel that Rock had instigated. He had lived abroad a great deal, and, in fact, at this very date he was staying at an hotel in Rome. Though he had not once set eyes on the vice, since parting from her in the room with her firstborn, he had managed to obtain tidings of her from time to time during the interval. In this way Pearson learned that, shortly after their resumption of a common life in her house, Ike had ill-used her, till fortunately, the business to which Jocelyn had assisted him chancing to prosper, he became immersed in its details, and allowed a vice to pursue her household courses without interference, initiating that kind of domestic reconciliation which is so calm and durable, having as its chief ingredient neither hate nor love, but an all-embracing indifference. At first Pearson had sent her sums of money privately, fearing lest her husband should deny her material comforts. But he soon found, to his great relief, that such help was unnecessary social ambition prompting Ike to set up as quite a gentleman islander, and to allow a vice a scope for show which he would never have allowed in mere Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.